The federal appeals court overturned a federal law last week that prevents people from owning firearms while they are under a restraining order for domestic violence. The court cited a U.S. Supreme Court ruling from last summer that said gun laws should be evaluated based on historical tradition. It's one of the most prominent examples of that landmark Supreme Court ruling changing gun law in the United States. It has legal scholars wondering what could be next. You can join in at 800-642-1234 on this specific case. Do you think the federal government or state or local government should have the ability to say a person can't have a firearm in their possession while they're under a domestic violence restraining order? Do you like that idea? Not like it? Why? Why not? Do you have wider concerns about the way guns are regulated, recent changes in court rulings on firearms? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Eric Rubin is an assistant professor of law at the Dedman School of Law at Southern Methodist University in Texas and a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University's School of Law. His work focuses on guns, the Second Amendment, and criminal law. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be here, Rob.
Can you tell us a little more about this this court ruling on the domestic violence restraining orders and guns?
Sure. So the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, struck down a decades-old U.S. law that barred domestic abusers from possessing firearms. And in particular, the way the law operated was that it barred gun possession by people who were subject to civil domestic violence restraining orders. And in this case, the defendant, whose name was Zaki Rahimi, assaulted his girlfriend, had agreed to a restraining order that prohibited from possessing firearms, and then was caught with firearms. And when he was prosecuted, he challenged the restriction as unconstitutional, as a violation of the Second Amendment.
Before we get to the grounds for that, this was a federal law. I understand some states have comparable laws, and those are, at least for now, still in effect. Do I have that right?
Yeah, so a lot of states have similar restrictions on firearm possession following domestic violence restraining orders. And those were not immediately affected by this ruling. And in fact, this ruling only is going to govern Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, where the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has jurisdiction. So the rest of the country thus far is not going to be bound or controlled by this decision.
Presumably that may change. It will go to the Supreme Court, and I can imagine challenges to state laws eventually making their way through the federal court system. Is that something you expect to see happen?
Right now, after the Bruin decision from this past June, which really upheaved the way that courts are applying the Second Amendment, we're seeing all gun restrictions, in fact, all weapons restrictions, being challenged as a violation of the Second Amendment. The field of weapons regulation is immense, and we're seeing challenges not only to domestic violence restraining orders, but to restrictions on bringing guns to certain places, the types of weapons that you are allowed to possess, for instance, automatic weapons versus semi-automatic weapons. So we're certainly going to see a lot more litigation around domestic violence restraining orders, and even disqualifying people who are subject to who have been convicted of domestic violence offenses from possessing a firearm. There's going to be a lot of litigation in the coming months and years.
Talking to law professor Eric Rubin from Southern Methodist University about a new court ruling on domestic violence restraining orders and guns and wider issues after a big Supreme Court ruling last summer. And Eric, let's get into that ruling now, the Bruin ruling. The majority in the court gave, in effect, a new standard for how to evaluate firearm regulations under the Second Amendment. What changed?
Sure. So, the specific issue in that case was a century-old regulation in New York City, or New York State, rather, that said that before you can carry a gun, handgun in public, you need to get a permit. In order to get that permit, you needed to show that you were at a heightened risk of being attacked. It was not a domestic violence restriction, and the court ultimately struck down that restriction. But the reason why that opinion even affected other issues like domestic violence restrictions on firearm possession is that, as you mentioned, the Supreme Court said that going forward, courts are going to have to apply a novel test for deciding on the constitutionality of gun laws. In particular, courts have to assess, after Bruin, whether a given restriction is consistent with historical tradition. And to do that, the Supreme Court said that the government has to point to analogous regulations from back in the late 1700s when the Second Amendment was adopted, or maybe into the 1800s. And of course, when it comes to something like domestic violence restraining orders, the government is having a hard time doing that because back in the late 1700s, our moral compass when it comes to gendered violence was totally different. In fact, it was gendered violence, domestic violence was viewed as a private matter. There was even something called a right of chastisement where husbands had the right to discipline their wives and children. So of course there were no restrictions on gun possession for domestic abusers back then. And that makes it hard for the government to try to analogize to other sorts of things that did exist.
And that late 1700s standard, I mean, most practical firearms at that point had exactly one round at a time, as I understand it. So a law that restricted magazine capacity, would that face the same kind of challenge while there were no such laws in the late 1700s?
Absolutely. There's a big problem of what historians call anachronism. Reading history through a modern day lens. The firearms back in the late 1700s were very different. They were muzzle loaders that were unsafe to keep loaded. So a lot of the historical research on the sorts of crimes and weapons use that happened back then did not involve guns at all. In fact, a lot of crime just happened with whatever was close at hand, not firearms, but knives and blunt force objects and the like. So it was a very different time with respect to technology. Technology's advanced a great deal, but there's also been an incredible amount of social change since then. And when it comes to domestic violence, it's very readily apparent.
Let's bring on a caller. Nancy is with us in Rib Mountain. Nancy, hi.
Hi. I would just like to add to that. Women are not property anymore, even though our legislature is beginning to think we are. And I think if you are arrested for domestic or you are under a restraining order, you have no business holding a firearm. And overall, I'd like to see the 3-day waiting period reinstated just for safety reasons.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Eric, what do you think?
Yes, no, I think that there's no doubt that removing firearms from domestic abusers can prevent homicides. In fact, women are 5 times more likely to die in a domestic violence situation if a gun is present. Every single month, an average of 70 women are shot and killed by an intimate partner. This is one of those areas of gun policy where the empirics all point in one direction. But one of the things that the court said here is that the question, I'm quoting from the opinion, this is the very first sentence, the question presented in this case is not whether prohibiting the possession of firearms by someone subject to a domestic violence restraining order is a laudable policy goal. And then it goes on to say the question is whether or not this is consistent with history or tradition. So the court, in essence, and a lot of courts after Bruin, are basically saying that modern day realities, modern day empirics are not relevant.
Thanks for the call, Nancy. We're talking to Southern Methodist University law professor Eric Rubin about gun laws and a recent court ruling that struck down, at least in one part of the country, a federal firearm ban for people under restraining orders for domestic violence. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of that decision and the Bruin decision we're talking about that says, hey, you want a gun law, you have to find an analogy with something from the late 1700s when the Second Amendment came into effect? Call in with your thoughts, your questions on how this all works at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up the conversation with Eric Rubin, law professor at Southern Methodist University, expert on the Second Amendment. He's with us today to look at the legal implications of a federal appeals court ruling that struck down the law banning gun ownership for people under restraining orders for domestic violence. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on that particular ruling. Also on big changes from the U.S. Supreme Court on the standards that have to be met when it comes to gun laws around the country, saying there has to be an analogy to the late 1700s. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We lost our guest there for a moment, but Eric, we have you back. Are there other cases now you see in the courts right now under Bruin that you're keeping a particularly close eye on that we could see, as you said, a big upheaval?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, there's a lot of litigation going on right now, a lot of litigation. One of the areas of litigation that we're seeing is further refinement of where it's permissible to bar people from carrying guns in public. So after the Bruin decision, which struck down a century-old law in New York as not old enough, the state legislatures in places like New York and New Jersey and California are passing new laws that are saying, okay, well, it's easier to get a permit, but we're going to restrict you from carrying that gun in certain places, like zoos and casinos and beaches and libraries. And a lot of those place-based restrictions are getting struck down. In fact, just last week, a court in New Jersey struck down a restriction on bringing guns into zoos and libraries and casinos and, I believe, even airports. So there's just a lot of litigation right now. I think people are surprised by the sorts of restrictions that are getting struck down. Another court said that it's unconstitutional and a violation of the Second Amendment to require or to bar the possession of firearms without serial numbers, so-called ghost guns. And the court said, look, there were no serial numbers back in the late 1700s, and there's no requirement for serial numbers, so we can't require them now. So there's, there's differing opinions amongst the courts. There are splits looking at the same historical record and coming out to different conclusions. There's just a lot of litigation, and all around, it's a bit of a mess right now.
Yeah, I've seen people say the Bruin ruling, in effect, makes judges turn into historians in their spare time.
It definitely places a huge emphasis on a different sort of litigation argument than lawyers are used to making and judges are used to seeing. One judge in California asked the parties to submit not briefs, but a spreadsheet with a list of all of the historical laws that might be relevant to the dispute. And that's just not an ordinary form of argumentation that you see in the courts.
Let's bring on another caller now. Margarita is with us in Wisconsin Rapids. Margarita, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. For people who have a record of domestic violence that was, among quotations, clear, how is that new law addressing them, as people who have a record of domestic violence and they have a gun or they have guns in their homes?
Margarita, thanks for the call. Yeah, how is that enforced, Eric, or how is that enforced?
Yeah, sure. So, well, one thing with respect to these domestic violence restraining orders, they're temporary restrictions on the possession of firearm. They're not, they tend not to just go on to infinity. They're temporary. They're usually for a year or maybe 2 years. And then there are a series of court hearings when the court decides whether or not they should stay in place. Enforcement of these laws is a big problem. And one of the things that happened in this case was that Rahimi, the defendant here, had agreed to a domestic violence restraining order, agreed to give up his gun, and then didn't give up his gun. In fact, he assaulted his girlfriend, which led to the restraining order. But even though he wasn't allowed to have a gun, he later shot several times into the home of a person who he sold drugs. He got in a car accident and then it shot at the other driver. He shot into a law enforcement vehicle. And there were other incidents as well. And so all of this, he should not have had a gun during these incidents because of the domestic violence restraining order. But I think that goes to the point that a lot of the enforcement of this is just that you hope that the threat of a criminal sanction will deter people from possessing firearms.
Thanks for the call, Margarita. Eric, you'd mentioned splits in the courts. I've seen some speculation that there might be some buyer's remorse from some of the members of the U.S. Supreme Court who concurred with this Bruin opinion. Justice Thomas, I think, wrote the majority opinion. There's talk that a couple of the other conservative, quote-unquote, justices might want to dial it back. Do you think there's anything to that?
There might be. It's really difficult to know. The Bruin opinion itself, the majority opinion, all six justices signed onto it. But then there are two concurrences. One of the concurrences was by Justice Brett Kavanaugh. It was joined by Chief Justice John Roberts. And in that concurrence, Kavanaugh made very clear that the ruling does not affect the ability to require permits for the public carrying of firearms, even though, and this went unsaid or unanalyzed, even though permits weren't required for public carry of firearms back in the late 1700s. And also said that the opinion in Bruin didn't call into question some of the sorts of restrictions that the Supreme Court blessed over a decade earlier in a case called Heller. And those restrictions included bars on gun possession by felons and the mentally ill, and bringing firearms into certain sensitive places, even though those restrictions don't have clear historical analogs. So it's possible that even while the Supreme Court imposed this novel test that doesn't apply in other areas of constitutional law, some of the justices are less wedded to it than others. And ultimately, because of these splits, because important laws are getting struck down, the Supreme Court's going to have to get back involved sooner rather than later to provide a bit of clarity.
We'll leave it there. Eric, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Eric Rubin is an assistant professor of law at Southern Methodist University in Texas and a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. He's with us today for a look at the impact of a ruling by a federal appeals court that overturned in that district a federal law that prohibited people from owning guns while under a restraining order for domestic violence.